free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. See our past and upcoming lineup of speakers, download our past shows, and if you're listening live, see our list of call-in numbers if you want to ask some questions. We do ask that you wait till the end of the show to do so. We have two very special guests today on the show, June 2nd, 2008. Richard Hicks, who is the inventor and president of H2 Oil, is a technology that is a nanotechnology, a fuel additive for improving mileage by around 10 to 15 or more percent, has billions of driving miles chalked up in other countries, including being added to the fuel supply in China, including their military fuel. This product is now coming to the U.S. via Fuel Legacy, an MLL company, headed by our second guest, Dan Atkinson. Richard and Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sterling.
Thank you very much, Sterling.
Well, what we'd like to do is kind of break this into two segments. Both of you are welcome to chime in on either segment. The first segment I'd like to focus on the technology, how it works, what it does, how it's been tested, kind of the history of it, and that'll be primarily directed toward Richard, the inventor, and then the second half we'll kind of talk about the rollout in the United States, the multi-level marketing aspect of it, and when that's going to be launching here in the United States, June 21st, what's entailed in that. So, does that sound like a good game plan?
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Sounds great.
Okay, well, Richard, tell us about this product. You're the inventor. How did it come about, and tell us about where it's been and what it does.
Whoa, okay. Let me first correct you. I am one of the inventors. There are two of us here at H2 Oil. There's my partner, Ben Song, and myself. And we've been working together probably for 20 or 25 years now. We were originally, way back when in the beginning, in fuel emulsions. Fuel emulsions are mixtures of fuel and water. An emulsion is something which, when you mix two liquids together, they don't normally like to mix. If you try and mix gasoline and water together and you shake it up in a little glass jar, it'll quickly separate and the water will be at the bottom and the gas will be at the top. And there'll be a kind of hazy layer between them where you've got some water in the gasoline and some gasoline in the water. And that's emulsions. This is our technology that goes way back. Fuel emulsions, actually 1913 and 1918 were the first patents. If you search the patent database, you'll find them beginning the early 1900s, between 1913 and 1918. And there have literally been hundreds and hundreds of patents filed by various people and oil companies from right up to the present day. In fact, some of the major players in this field are the large oil companies like ExxonMobil and Shell and BP. They all hold several patents in fuel emulsions. But the problem is getting the technology to the marketplace, making it so that it's safe enough and it works well enough and getting the cost right. And that's a really tricky balancing act to do. And we've managed to fix that over the years. Because we've been doing it so long, we managed to solve all of the problems just one at a time as they come along, applying our knowledge from what we've learned over the years. We've solved all of the problems related to this technology.
So when you say problems, let's talk about what this product is and what it does and maybe what some of the problems have been.
Okay, you have some fairly serious challenges. First of all, chemically it's very difficult to get oil and water to mix together. The only way to do it is to either you use a huge amount of mechanical agitation where you literally knock the heck out of the little tiny water droplets, either with a very high shear pump or some ultrasonic kind of way to break the water break the water droplets into much smaller sizes. The smaller they are, the more stable they are. They don't weigh as much. And when they're really small, they kind of get sticky and they won't tend to separate as fast. The water droplet won't drop as fast because water is heavier than fuel. That's why it drops to the bottom. And the other way to do it, which is the way we do it, is we use chemical action. We use some fairly sophisticated surfactants to do this. And a surfactant really is something that makes oil and water mix together. The easiest way to look at a surfactant is it's like a detergent or a soap. When you add the detergent to the fuel water mixture, what it does is it reduces the surface tension between the water and the oil. It's the surface tension that makes the droplets form fairly large droplets. And if you can reduce that to almost zero, then you can form a microemulsion, which is where the water droplets are really, really tiny. Typically, if the fuel water mixture is cloudy, it means that the droplets are large enough to see the droplets, and that happens at around about 1 micron in size, which is a thousandth of a meter. Once they're smaller than that, then you start to get into the area where they're smaller than the wavelength of light. That's when it turns into a microemulsion. Microemulsions are clear. You can see right through them. The water droplets are really tiny, typically less than 400 or 500 nanometers, which is a billionth of a meter, and that's really tiny. And, of course, the smaller they are, the more stable they are, which is why microemulsions are much more stable than macroemulsions, which have the large droplets.
Richard, if I could jump in here for a second. Yeah. I'm remembering something from our earlier conversation, and to kind of help the audience understand and appreciate why having water in the fuel is of interest, a lot of the people in our audience are familiar with these hydrogen injection technologies where you have an onboard electrolysis unit that electrolyzes water using the electrical current from the battery, and then hydrogen oxygen gas mixture goes into the air intake, and it apparently catalyzes a more efficient burn of the fuel because it breaks the larger molecules of the fuel into smaller ones. And if I remember right from our conversation, what you're doing is you're doing that electrolysis inside of the chamber, inside of the ignition chamber, right at the ignition spark, where it needs to happen, and so you have this reaction of breaking down the larger molecules of the petrol into smaller one via this electrolysis of this water at the spark. Did I get that close?
Yeah, you did really well there. It's a little more complicated than that. That area between the two electrodes in the spark plug, that little gap there where the spark jumps, that's a really critical area for combustion. If you can get a really strong spark and you have a very strong beginning to combustion, in other words, the air and fuel vapor will burn very easily. Once you can get that spark established and combustion begins, that moment is called a chaos moment. The way combustion progresses from that point on is extremely sensitive to the initial conditions. Just a small push in the right direction when that spark comes makes a big difference in the way combustion progresses from then on. And what we are able to do, we saturate the whole of the combustion chamber with our little tiny water droplets, so that we can pretty much guarantee when the spark comes, there'll be a lot of our little tiny water droplets between the two electrodes and the spark plug. And the energy of that spark plug is enough to disassociate the water into the hydrogen and the oxygen. It'll actually break the molecule. And having a small amount of hydrogen and oxygen at that particular time will help the flame burn so much better and so much faster. And that's one of the major ways in which we improve combustion. We pretty much guarantee every
time
you get a spark.
Does it propagate from the spark outward in the same mechanism?
I'm sorry?
Does it propagate from the spark outward into the
piston? No, actually, the flame itself will propagate more robustly. It'll be a lot stronger because immediately ahead of the advancing flame front, we've still got our little tiny catalytically active water droplets right ahead of the flame front, and that will make combustion much smoother, much more regular. So one of the major benefits we have is we regulate combustion. We make sure that it's always strong combustion, and the speed of the flame is pretty constant. It's one of the major difficulties of an engine manufacturer is, first of all, getting that spark to ignite the fuel in a very strong way, and then being able to control the speed of the flame front across the combustion chamber. These are very difficult things for an engine manufacturer to do. But since we do it in the, we come in with the fuel, it's a much easier thing for a fuel to do than it is for an engine manufacturer.
Huh. Well, you've given us a good idea that you've come up with a way of making that fuel burn more efficiently. Let's divert the conversation for a second to talk about what has been done to test this product and to demonstrate it in laboratories, in the field with the actual vehicles. What has been done with, in the introduction I mentioned, there's been billions of miles of driving miles behind this product so far.
Yes, we've been in the business a long time. We've accumulated a huge amount of data. One of the major problems we had was it's very difficult to duplicate in a stationary engine the kind of variability you have on the road. And in fact, back in 1995, as a company, we decided not to do any more lab testing. We actually stopped lab testing back in 1995 because we found out in the early days that you can't duplicate it in a lab. The only way to develop the product is to actually do the testing on the road. This is a much more expensive and much more difficult way to do it, but it is the only way to do it because you can't duplicate in the lab what happens on the road. So we don't have that many lab tests. We have lab tests that were done on our behalf by other companies. In other words, our joint venture partner in China, who is PetroChina, they've done extensive research on our product, and they've done a lot of their own lab tests to prove how well it works. It's not something that we would spend money on because we can't really justify doing that kind of expense because we don't learn that much from it. The only way to learn is to actually put it in a vehicle on the road and drive it.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little contrary to what I'm used to hearing, which is the ultimate scientific test is in the controlled environment of a lab where you reduce the variables down to with and without.
Oh, yeah. The scientific basis for doing testing that way is well established. I mean, that is the basic scientific principle. You come up with an idea, and then you develop a test that will prove it one way or the other, and you go ahead into a lab and you do that. And that is only valid if the test in the lab duplicates what happens in real life. Now, if in real life you get a great mileage improvement and in the lab you don't get anything, which of those two are you going to believe, and which, in fact, is going to be more suitable for a commercial product? I would rather have it work in real life and give us 10%, 20% fuel saving than I would have it in the lab and not be able to duplicate it in real life. It's no good having a great result in the lab if you put it in the gas tank and when you drive down the road, nothing happens. That's the wrong way around. You have to have it in real life.
Why would it be that there's a difference between the two? Give us an example of how the lab environment differs from the road environment.
Okay. What it goes back to is the original chaos theory that I talked about, the way the fuel vaporizes and the way it burns. One of the major problems you have is that every engine coming off the production line is different. Because of the manufacturing tolerances, you know, the pass-fail limits that happen with the like the weight of the pistons and the size of the bores in the cylinder block. Each throw of the crankshaft where they machine the crankshaft to give so much stroke, so much displacement for the engine, everything is different. Each cylinder is different. Each valve has a slightly different weight. And when you build an engine from the components which are slightly variable, you'll end up with an engine which has the technical term for it is cyclic irregularity or cyclic dispersion. And that means that combustion will be slightly different for each cylinder. and also slightly different from stroke to stroke. Even for the same cylinder, the next power stroke will give slightly less power. There's a lot of work done by ExxonMobil on this very subject many, many years ago. And they have technical papers which have been published which says that if you can reduce cyclic irregularity, you can gain maybe 25% improvement in fuel economy. And this is the area where we're at. The problem is you can't do that in the lab because you've only got one engine. And the engine is variable from stroke to stroke. So what you're learning with one engine really is not going to duplicate what's going to happen in real life because every engine is different. Particularly how that engine reacts to the environment, like the driver, the fuel, the load, the route, you know, the weather on that day, the humidity, all kinds of things. There are just too many variables. There's no way you can duplicate that in a lab. The only way to do it is on the road.
But I would think that something that's going to work on the road would also work in the lab.
Oh, yes. We have test results in the lab. We're getting, in a lab engine, under very, very highly controlled conditions, typically 6 to 8% fuel economy improvement. Now, 6 to 8% in the lab always translates to 15 to 20% on the road because the variability is different. Let's say you're an engine manufacturer like Cummins or Detroit Diesel or whoever it is, and you get asked to supply an engine to Southwest Research, who can do the testing. You are going to supply them the very best engine you can. You're going to make sure that that engine is absolutely perfect because any test they do is going to reflect on you as a manufacturer. So manufacturers always supply the best engine. If you go to an auto dealership and you look at the vehicle, that little sticker they have in the window which says EPA, mileage, city, and highway,
mm-hmm.
The reason you can never, ever get to as good a mileage as that is because the engine manufacturers know how the testing is done, and they supply an engine which it will meet all of their quality standards, but everything will be at the right end of the pass-fail limit. All the pistons are going to be the same weight. All the clearances are going to be the same. That engine will give perfect mileage because the engine manufacturers pretty much hand-built the engine. Now, mass-production engines don't get built that way, and that's one of the reasons that when you look at the EPA sticker, you're never going to get close to the mileages they get because there's only a very, very small number of engines ever get built that way, and that's only by chance. Those engines are all hand-built.
Okay. Well, let's talk now about... of these billions of miles that have been run with this product, do you have an overall average improvement of mileage range and a typical range that people might expect? I understand that it's different from one vehicle to another. If you have an already high mileage vehicle, high efficiency vehicle, I should say, you typically don't get as much improvement as you do on a lower efficiency vehicle when you add a product like this.
Yeah. You end up with what's called a bell-shaped curve. The statisticians amongst us will know exactly what that is, but for those guys who don't recognize the term, what it does is it looks at all of the test data, and then it draws a little curve saying how likely it is that you're going to be within a typical range. And what we've done, it's slightly different for gasoline and diesel because the diesel engine is inherently a little more efficient than the gasoline engine. But most gasoline engines, between 60 and 70% of everybody who uses it, they're going to be up there in somewhere between 10 and 20% fuel saving typically. And there will be a few percentage, maybe 5% of the people, are not going to get enough of a saving to notice it. We've found that unless you're 7.5% or better improvement, it's very difficult for people to notice that. Once you're over about 7.5%, if you're in the 10% and above range, it's very easy to notice it. And there will also be a small percentage of the users who will have a great benefit. If their engines were not built very well, they're going to be up there in the 25%, even 30% saving, particularly if they start off with a mechanical problem. If they had, say, a plugged fuel injector, one of the benefits we have is we will clean fuel injectors. So if you have an old vehicle which isn't running very well with a dirty fuel injector, we have people saving 30 and 40%. partly because of the improvement from our nanotechnology, but also we fixed some other problem that they had, like a blocked fuel injector. Now, if you're a diesel vehicle, you're going to be somewhere between 5 and 15% fuel saving. The average runs about 10%. So that's the area where we're in. And this is based on literally billions of miles of experience.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that 3 billion miles in terms of what it comprises. How many countries are you in? And did I understand right that the Chinese government has implemented this in some way?
Yeah, in 2005, if I remember right, we joint ventured with the Chinese government. The joint venture partner that they picked for us was PetroChina. Now, PetroChina is the largest industrial company in the world. They are way bigger than ExxonMobil. To give you some idea of what a prestigious joint venture that was for us, the Chinese government picked PetroChina to be our joint venture partner. We have a manufacturing plant built in China where they manufacture the product locally. And they use it in their own fuel. It's not something which they put into the whole supply of China. That's misleading to say that. PetroChina uses it themselves for their own fuel, for their own uses. In other words, if they have a remote area where they have oil production, all of those rigs that operate on diesel fuel or gasoline and their vehicles in remote areas, they will put this additive in that fuel because they know it's going to reduce the maintenance cost. You don't have to go out to that oil rig every 3 months to fix a problem. It will run without a problem for as long as they want. So they're using it internally. It's not put in to the whole of the fuel in China. PetroChina is using it themselves.
Was there something about the military using it?
Yes. We've been selling in China for so many years now that eventually it gets put in pretty much every application we can even think of. The Chinese military jets have used it. And the primary reason they use it, they're not interested in fuel economy. What they want is to have the jets available whenever they need them, and the main reason they used it was it kept the turbine blades clean. There would be carbon deposits building up on the turbine blades, and that would affect the performance of the aircraft, so every so many thousand hours that engine would have to be rebuilt and the turbine blades would have to be cleaned. Well, they found out that you don't need that. If you put this product in the fuel, it will keep the turbine blades clean.
We haven't addressed the question of nano. Why is this called a nanotechnology?
Legally, the definition of nano is a technology which is carried out in the size range between about 10 nanometers to 100 nanometers, which is really small. If you have technology operating in that size range, then you can genuinely call yourself nanotechnology. We had our little tiny water droplets, we have those measured. They're our active ingredient. They were measured at between 3 and 9 nanometers. It was an independent test done by a well-known university. So we're actually sub-nano. We're slightly below the cut point for nano.
University was that?
This was the University of Hong Kong, Science and Technology in Hong Kong.
Okay.
They put it into gasoline, and they used a special device for measuring the droplet size. They also did the distribution, which says so many percent of this size and so many percent of that size. And most of ours came in at about 3 to 4 nanometers. And that is critically important for our technology because we actually use the water as a catalytic agent, as a catalyst to affect combustion. You would normally use something like platinum or rhodium or palladium in the catalytic converter. Those metals are very highly catalytically active, and they help the hydrocarbons burn. When you have water in that size range, the water itself is highly catalytic. And, in fact, what we do is we put the catalytic converter in the combustion chamber. We use our little tiny water droplets. If you get the size exactly right, which our technology allows us to control the droplet sizes, when they're in that size range, 3 nanometers or less, they are highly catalytic and give you the benefit of having like a catalytic converter in the combustion chamber.
That it contributes to the improvement in mileage.
Yes. Several ways it does that. Firstly, the burn is more robust to begin with. And secondly, it progresses much more smoothly And thirdly, it will actually burn for much longer. Instead of the flame going out as the piston comes down, there's a certain point where the temperature drops below a certain level and the flame goes out. Having our nanotechnology in there allows that flame to keep burning to much lower temperatures, and that gives you that extra little bit of push on the piston at the end of the stroke. So there's a little bit more power there.
What about the composition of the nanotechnology and its toxicity and its source?
We're very careful because the product is handled by the general public. We have to be ultra-cautious in the ingredients that we have in there. All of our ingredients come from non-petroleum industries, which typically is food, pharmaceutical, agricultural, cosmetic, those kind of areas. We don't have anything that's made for us by an oil company. All of our products are generally household-type ingredients, which are mass-produced in volume for those industries. So we rely on those guys to do all the testing for us to make sure that the stuff is safe. And we know that if we pick an ingredient which comes from a commonly available household product, then that is about as safe as you can get, because people will do anything to those household products. So that's pretty much what our ingredient list is.
So if a child ingested this accidentally?
There would be no, unless they drank like two bottles of it, which nobody would ever do because it doesn't taste particularly nice, then you might start having a problem. But, you know, two or three mouthfuls, no, they're not going to have a problem with it. If they get past the first mouthful, I'd be really surprised. It's like drinking shampoo.
Okay. And what so one of the reasons, if I remember our conversation, for going to a non-petroleum based for the product composition was so that there's no component that is log-jammed in a mass production scenario.
Yeah, we have to be careful in the ingredients we use, because if you come up with a technology such as this where you're going to improve fuel economy, in other words, there'll be some fairly large oil companies that will suddenly see a reduction in the volume of their sales, and certain government agencies that won't be getting as much tax from the fuel sales that they used to. We need to be sure that there's a reduced possibility that they could suddenly turn around and say to us, oh, I'm sorry, this particular component is in short supply, and we can't let you have any of that this month. So we were very careful to pick ingredients that are non-petroleum based. It's mainly a security of supply reason for doing that.
Now, in terms of the composition of this material and its availability, this is something that you anticipate would never be compromised in terms of being able to roll out as large of volumes as the customers would demand.
Yeah, we were very careful when we originally made the formulas that each of our ingredients, we have at least three independent suppliers who produce in bulk for other industries. That gives us the security to know that, I mean, even if one or even two of our suppliers fell by the wayside, there'd still be the third supply left that could keep up with our demand.
What about intellectual property? Is this protected by trade secrets or patents? How do you do that?
It's protected. We have several layers of protection here. Our original patent filed way back, in fact, before 1990, we were filing patents. And the way the patent office works is it usually takes them several years to realize that we've even written to them. They have a three-year in-basket, and it takes about 3 or 4 years before it reaches the top and somebody looks at it. So it takes them a long time to look at the patent applications we've made. And in that 3 years, we have made several improvements in our formula. Typically, every 6 months, we have a generational improvement in our formula. We're up to generation 6 right now. And the patent office will write back to us, and we will simply reply with what's called a continuation in part, where we've added the extra stuff in that we've discovered during the three-year wait that the patent office were looking at it. So we're years and years ahead of them. That backlog we're getting around to our patent application. And we would never want them to issue anyway, because as soon as they issue, it's published information. And we sell all over the world, including some very large countries that really are not very friendly to intellectual patent rights. So we don't want this stuff being copied. So you won't ever see a patent issue from us, which is detailed enough for people to understand how to do it. And we also have extra protection from trade secrets. Manufacturing this is highly complicated. It's not an easy thing to manufacture. That's one of the major reasons there aren't many other players in this area, because you can make microemulsions in the lab, but they're just as difficult as anything to manufacture in mass-produced. So we have several layers of protection here.
So in the method of manufacturing, you have that trade secret protected. And in terms of the difficulty of manufacturing, have you run into obstacles where the manufacturer is not able to stay on spec and perform to the manufacturing
spec?
Yeah,
because their spec is not intended for our industry. If it was an agricultural product, they would be looking at different properties to us. So we anticipate that there are going to be widespread variations in raw ingredient properties, and we've compensated for that in our manufacturing process. We can accept some fairly wide ranges in quality control for our incoming product, and we can compensate for that in our manufacturing process. It how you do that is one of our trade secrets.
What I'd like to do now is switch over to Dan and talk about the rollout of this product in the United States. Before we do that, are there any areas, key areas that we've not addressed that you'd like to address?
There's one thing that I should have said. I talked a lot about the catalytic effect, which is at the instant of combustion. We actually have benefits that happen ahead of time. Our little clusters of water will actually help the fuel vaporize, and they will also help the air-fuel mixing. And this is done by something called microexplosions. That technology is very well recognized and understood, so I didn't really get into that, but that's at least 50% of our technology is vaporizing the fuel and helping it mix well with the air. That's not an easy thing for an engine manufacturer to do, but for a fuel supply like us, it's pretty easy for us to do that. And that's about the only thing that I should have said that I didn't get around to.
Thank you. I appreciate that addition.
Okay.
Okay, Dan, let's switch over to you now, and maybe you can tell us how you came to know about this product and what you plan on doing with it here in the United States and elsewhere.
Well, Sterling, thanks, first of all, for having us on your call. I really appreciate being able to talk to folks about what's going on, because I'm really excited about this. From a marketing standpoint, this is an extremely important industry right now. If you just look at the news or the radio or even conversation in the workplace, right now fuel prices and emissions are the number one topic. So being that I've been in the marketing arena for about 15 years now, the last 3 years I've really dedicated my time to finding the best product. I already understood the marketplace, and I think with just a simple qualifying of it, I mean, people understand that everyone must buy fuel. We don't have to talk too long on that. It's the largest marketplace in history, because it affects every country, every continent, every island. Every populated mass point right now in the world is talking about how we can reduce the spending of fuel and decrease our emissions that are having global problems. So when I looked at that marketplace being as large as it is, and I started qualifying how large that was going to be in the up-and-coming future, my first goal was to find the best product, and Richard's been talking about what we found. Now, they've been in business for 18 years, but they're brilliant at what they do. We believe we have the best marketplace for what we do. So marrying the two of those is going to create a large synergy between one of the best marketing arenas, I believe, being network marketing and commercial marketing, with what has found to be now one of the best products on the market.
So in terms of your experience, you actually have been involved in another product similar to this one before you found out about the H2 oil or e-fuel, E2E fuel. So when I say 2E's, it's EE fuel is how that's described. H2 oil is a company that Richard was involved with, or he is involved with, and you're going to call your company, or are calling your company, Fuel Legacy. You were involved in another product before this one, which, and you had some bad experiences. It was a fairly good product. The business had some ethics problems. Do you want to address that at all?
I want to address it a lot more than I'm going to on here. But to be honest, Sterling, my problem was I first identified the marketplace. So if I could back up 30 seconds, this marketplace is undeniably the largest everyone's looking at. So from a network marketing standpoint to just driving people to a business opportunity, you know, the health and wellness industry has capitalized on that marketplace for many, many years because of the onslaught of the baby boomers, and we know what they've done. So when you look at this product and the mass interest that it's creating everywhere, I got involved, as you said, with another company. I originally was promoting another liquid product that's an older product. It's an ester-based product that does a fair job, especially on diesel. Side by side, they have no comparison. This is cutting-edge technology. And what I mean by that is the H2 oil product's been around for some 18 years, I believe, with a lot more years behind that in study before now. But we're not using the product they started with 18 years ago. The other product was a 16-year-old technology that has had very, very few upgrades since the very beginning, and it's simply just a really good lubrication. I still was behind promoting a product that could help in these areas we're talking about, but when I found H2 oil, undeniably there was no comparison. And already amassing people in 21 different countries from this other company and having people with a lot of interest in saving on miles per gallon and reducing emissions and creating a business opportunity around that, and the business opportunity being the number one thing they were looking at, I wanted the number one product. We already had the number one market. We had the number one topic people are talking about from day to day, so it's very difficult to be second or third in that arena. If someone gets this right and comes up with the right product, this is probably one of the largest companies that will emerge in 2008 in the marketing arena of network marketing. Because the story, look what Richard has just been speaking about. If I could elaborate just a little bit, Sterling, if you look at the credibility behind this company, when I looked at H2 Oil, I immediately went to the credits I could not find in any other company anywhere. And there's powders and pills and liquids all over the market, because I'm not the only person by far that has identified this industry of fuel additives and so on being a hot market, but that the products that are out there besides this one have very little credibility anywhere. We're talking about a company, H2 Oil, and this e-fuel as being one of the top 25 companies recognized by Forbes magazine in nanotechnology. Wall Street Reports has also done write-ups on it. The Chinese EPA, the Chinese military, all these things you gentlemen have been talking about, including railroads, and again, as Richard said, billions of miles of testing with no incident. So when I compared to this product being the best, I couldn't stay anywhere else but come over here and say, listen, folks, here's what we have for a marketing plan. Here's what we've done in the industry. Here's our credibility. Let us take this exclusively in the network marketing arena to the United States and Canada and open these doors. And then we started talking. And we've been working on this very, very hard since the first parts of February.
Back to you, Richard. Could you talk for a second about why, for 18 years you've had this product, why haven't you taken it to the United States until now?
There's a couple of reasons for that. The first reason is, we haven't had fuel at $4 a gallon. When we first started, it was easy to buy gasoline at 99 cents a gallon. But we found that, it's sad for me to say this, but people are just lazy. At 99 cents a gallon, they cannot be bothered to add it to the tank every time they gas up. It may save them $5 or $10 in fuel costs when it was 99 cents a gallon, and that was just too much trouble for them. But that's no longer the case. Fuel here in California is $4 a gallon. If your diesel is $5 a gallon, and all of a sudden, instead of saving yourself $5, you're saving $20, $50. And at that level, people are much more inclined to use it than they would otherwise be. And the second reason is, originally we tried to sell in the U.S. market by approaching the government and the oil companies. And we learned over the years, in fact, it's still the case, even this year, I've talked to the Air Resources Board, and they've told me, we've done all the studies, we know that fuel additives don't work, and you're a fuel additive, therefore you can't work. And they have that inflexible attitude that they've done the studies, and they know that the technology we have is a fuel additive, and fuel additives never work. So we get kind of dragged in with everybody else that makes fuel additives, and most of them out there really don't work very well. And here we are with a great technology, but nobody will even look at it because fuel additives in general have such a bad reputation. Well, I'm sorry, but our product works, and it works extremely well. So they're the two main reasons. One is apathy, and the other one is ignorance.
Sterling, if I could add something to that.
Yeah, so back to you, Dan.
Well, Richard really brings to mind some of the challenges I've had. I've taken products into, and I'll get a little controversial here, but even school boards, which we all care a whole lot. I'm a grandfather. I've got three children. And I go to the school boards with a product that can save a school board literally millions of dollars at the 10% level. And we've got clients that are using $20, $30 million in fuel a year. You start saving them 10%, you can do the math. That's an enormous amount of money. I've sat before school boards and showed them how much this could actually save them. And it's very difficult to get past a lot of the red tape. I mean, it's just the way the society is set up. I'm not downplaying anybody here, but that's facts. So we decided to say, you know what, instead of proving this at the high levels, let's pay people to tell this story. Instead of putting it in a Walmart where there's no explanation or a large store, what I proposed to Richard and the Songs here at H2Oil was, let's take this to network marketer, pay people to tell a story about your business, just like many of the giants out there in the nutritional industry, and let's educate folks that this really will decrease emissions by an average of 30 to 50%. It will increase your fuel mileage by 10 to 20%. And just those low numbers, Sterling, a $20 bottle at 10%, $4 per gallon here, and I've not seen $4 per gallon here in California in a while. It's now $4.15, $4.20, $30, $40, and going up. But at $4 a gallon, a 10% savings on this small bottle that actually treats 150 gallons is about $60 to $120. That's 10 to 20%. So $20 out of pocket, $60 to $120 back in your pocket. When people try the product, they do tell the story. And whether they're being paid to do it or not, they're being paid just in the actual application. So this is unique in the network marketing arena. Most companies do not put money back in your pocket by using the product. And Sterling, if you think about all the companies out there from juices and prepaid services and others, you pay X amount of dollars, and your only return is if you get someone else to buy. This product actually gives you a return just in the sheer usage, which to me is very unique in this industry.
Yeah, so not only are you getting the return from on the investment, 2 to 3 times, you pay $20 for a bottle of product and you save $60 to $120 in its usage, but you also get the downstream kickback from promoting the product and getting other people to use it.
Exactly, and that's just not seen in the industry, and I hate to say that. I was sitting in front of my television the other night with my wife and daughter, and we were watching a movie, and up comes an Amway/Quickstar infomercial. I was really impressed. I mean, it's been a lot of years. They're the biggest out there. As far as what they do, they have a lot of products. And it literally is a paradigm shift of people's thinking right now. Network marketing is becoming professional enough to be aired on live television in the middle of a Seinfeld sitcom, not at 2 o'clock in the morning when no one's watching, but in the middle of prime time, they're now airing what network marketing can do. And that's not what network marketing was designed to do, but now the respect level is coming up as people are looking for an income. This not only, as you said, gives you back money from the sheer usage, by sharing the opportunity of becoming a wholesale distributor wherever you live, you not only get the savings, now you're getting a residual income on everyone else that's doing what? Getting the savings, which means you're paying for your fuel. Now your fuel bill is free. Now you're paying for your house payment. You're paying for your car payment. One of your spouses is quitting his job and so on. You've got a network marketing entrepreneur now in a household that can become successful, where I think that's been a challenge for some people when you're talking about some of the products and services in the industry. They're not as the topic is not as hot. This topic reaches out for, you have to buy fuel. How about if I could save you a way of doing that, and here's what I'm talking about. And if you'd like to become one of the new wholesale distributors for the company, here's what it pays. That's a huge story right now.
Traditionally, one of the things that happens with MLMs is that you get a few people who really work it and make tons of money, and then you have a bunch of other people who try it and don't make a lot of money, but they're making the other people rich because they join in. And with this product, what happens is everyone is saving money with the product, and so at a minimum, everyone's making money, at a minimum.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things that actually turned me off to the industry, if you would. And Sterling, a lot of people know me in the industry. I've created two teams of over 100,000 people, and it's never been by my own work. It's been because I've had some great team people on my organization, and we've made a lot of companies successful, and we've sold a lot of products because that's network marketing. But one of the things that's bothered me is the people that join first off the bat sometimes feel like their positioning is challenged, or, well, it's already been around 5 or 6 years. See, this product's never going to have that, because the way the price of fuel is, everyone you talk to, if they're not using the product, they really need to become a customer or pay a large fee for that. For the first time, I can sit across the table from literally anyone, from a CEO of a company to just a white-collar, blue-collar worker or whoever it is, and say, I've got a product that can actually relieve some of that problems you're having. You know, the price of gas is, as it's going up. This actually reduce your spending of your household by an average of 10 to 20%. What are you spending this month? And they can look at those numbers and say, I'm in. This isn't, this promises to make you feel better, or this will protect you down the line, a service that you might use, or it's not a product that's going to build up in your garage. People will use this, and they will share this, and they will get commissions for doing so that are unlike anything else in the industry. It's not a powder that you have to pour in or mix up. It's not a pill you have to crush. It's a liquid product in a 120 milliliter or 4 ounce bottle that you squeeze on one side. It's perfectly measured on the other side. It goes easily into the gas tank. End of story.
Yeah, let's talk just for a second about the mechanism of adding this to your fuel. What happens when you stop at the pump?
It's very simple. It's obviously better if you put the product in before you fill up, because it'll mix quicker. But we've all seen someone leave their gas cap off and go around a corner. Our gas is sloshing all the way up the neck and out, if we're not capped, back and forth. So it's nice if we can add it in the beginning, but if not, just adding it is sufficient. It is 8 milliliters of product per 10 gallons of fuel. So you're looking at right around 14, 15, 16 milliliters. And if you don't know milliliters, it doesn't matter, because it's right on the bottle in milliliters. That'll treat that much fuel. So 1 4-ounce bottle treats 150 gallons. It's very easy. You pull it out, you pull off one top, you squeeze it up to the amount needed, and literally you dump it in with no waste. I've seen other products where you just glug it out of a 32 or a 16-ounce bottle and hope you get it right. No funnels, no nothing. It's all contained in this one small bottle that's delivered for easy consumer use.
So you have a bottle of you know, a lot more than the 8 millimeters, for example, that you need. You take the cap off the dispenser portion, you squeeze the bottle, and it goes up this little side arm into the dispenser area. You measure the amount that you want. You squeeze it until you get the amount that you want, and then you pour that into your tank, and you get exactly that amount into your tank. You lift it back up, you put the cap back on, and you're done. I've played with these things before. I've added stuff using other additives. It's a very straightforward process.
Exactly.
And you don't have to, like you said, you don't have to use funnels. You don't have to touch it with your hand. You just lift the cap off this dispenser, pour it in, put the cap back on, and you're done.
Right. And, you know, that ease of use is what has a lot of people very interested as well, just simply because it's some of these products, like you said, you have to carry the funnels and you got a sloppy mess wiping things off. You do want a liquid product. If you're in this industry of fuel, I don't want to depend on something to dissolve in the bottom of my tank. Many of these are bound with paraffins, which is a wax. They're carcinogenic. They're not something that's healthy for the environment. And if you put them into your tank hoping that they'll dissolve and not clog up fuel filters, they don't compare to a liquid product that has easy delivery. What I really like about this also is we're talking about nanotechnology. So 4 ounces of this product is equal to other products on the market. It takes 24, 25 ounces to even come close to our product delivery. A 32-ounce bottle of this product treats almost 1,320 gallons. Other products take gallons plus to reach those levels. So whether you're a truck driver, whether you're a soccer mom driving kids around, or a commuting father, it's very easy to put a 4-ounce bottle, which is about as tall as the width of my hand, 3.5, 4 inches tall, and it treats, you know, the next 4, 5, 6 gas tanks, depending on what you're driving.
Let's talk about what happens on July or June 21st.
June 21st, we've been in what I call a free launch situation, and we're going to talk a little bit about the industry, and I hope this doesn't sound negative to anyone, but it's true. And I do believe in shooting from the hip here. Network marketing has become an industry where it's very professional, it's very prolific, people can make a lot of money. What I don't like is the hype and the expectations that some people let out there for some of the companies. I've always believed in having what I refer to as a free launch. For free, people are able to look at our company, take a position for free, again, look at the back office, understand what being a wholesale distributor is. We have nightly calls, 6 o'clock California every night, and we explain to people how to earn an income, how to become a network marketer. If you're one of those people that don't understand the marketplace, let us show you. You've got time to put your team together, to share this opportunity for no cost out of pocket. The 21st of June, we open the doors for the first time, we go from a free launch to a pre-launch. Now, a pre-launch situation allows you to become a distributor in our company at level X. There's three different ways you can purchase and buy into the company. There's some caveats we're adding that I think will make it very interesting for people. We're the first company I know of in the industry that's willing to pay people to try our product, and I'm not going to divulge that. There's a call Wednesday night that will explain that we're having out there, Sterling. So the 21st of June in Livermore at our office, it's an office in right off the freeway in Livermore. It's a 32,000-square-foot building. We will, for the first time, pre-launch this or open the doors for people to purchase and become wholesale distributors. And we literally have tens of thousands of people in line to do that. If you look at our website, we've had close to 600,000 hits on the website and people signing for free over the last 8 weeks.
And you're delivering product right now. What's that about?
You know, I've never seen this done in the networking arena either. And we did this for a reason. We were putting together a company from purchasing buildings to doing something that I'm not used to. We're literally, as a network marketing company, becoming the manufacturer and the distributor. H2 Oil is the mixing company. They're the backbone behind all of this. But we needed to put this in bottles. We purchased machinery from Chicago. We purchased buildings. We started setting up house as a manufacturer for the network marketing company ourselves. Because of my previous experience, I did not want to have any manufacturer problems, which I had those challenges before. So this is what we put together here. And, you know, Sterling, I apologize. I know this is live, but I forgot your question.
I was just asking, on the 21st, you're already delivering product before that now.
Right, and I was explaining what we had a lot of time in putting all this together. So what we did for the first time is we offered product at a cheaper rate. Most companies will launch a company, take dollars in, and start building their company. We didn't feel we needed to do that. But getting a full head of steam, we know how many people are going to join the company. We said, you know, let's leave an offering out there for a short period of time. And we haven't said this publicly, but Wednesday night, midnight, will be the last time we allow people to test the product. It's $34.95 for two bottles shipped anywhere. And what I mean by that is we've got trees all over the world that have been testing the product. Now, our exclusive to the network marketing holds in Canada and the United States, but as I explained earlier, we have distributing commercial in many, many places around the globe. So we started offering this $34.95 for two bottles. That's shipping and handling included.
Pre-launch, what's post-launch price?
Pardon?
That's a pre-launch price. Is there a post-launch price?
It'll be around $20 a bottle. Plus, you pay your own shipping and handling, and there's commissions now added to that because the price is now included. It's $16-$17 just to ship this to Hawaii, $20 up to Anchorage, Alaska, and so on. So we've absorbed that just so people can test the product and understand what we really believe we have our hands on.
You're going to be able to manufacture as high as 60,000 bottles per shift, three shifts a day.
No, 16,000 per machine, two machines, so about 30-some thousand bottles every seven-hour shift. I don't think we'll have problem keeping up with supply and demand. That's not going to be the issue, but being that the machines are on an order, well, they won't be here till the end of the month, we've held this off. Now, we will have plenty of product on hand when we launch on the 21st. In fact, it'll be an open house. I'm sure we'll have hundreds of people at the Livermore office, and we'll put that address out there later, and they'll be able to see pallets of product and what we're actually ready to do, and that's why we're doing it this way.
Are the machines in operation now to any extent?
Absolutely not. They're not. If they were in-house today, we'd be launching tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
So since they're not, we're paying and outsourcing, filling bottles, labeling, putting them into boxes. You know, I've seen other companies make this mistake, Sterling, and that's because we sit in such a volatile industry of people that want to join a network marketing company that has a real product like this. You can very easily open the door and have 10, 15,000 cases that have to be delivered inside the first week. And I've seen companies in the fuel industry get behind being able to deliver that. So the time we're taking right now is basically setting up and getting ready for what we know is going to take place on the 21st, and we will be ready on the 21st.
Where's the product coming from right now?
It's being, we purchased the barrels from H2 Oil, obviously, and then we put them in the labeled and sealed bottles ourselves in Livermore, and that will be our bottling and distribution arm for there.
And quickly, we're at the end of the hour. I want to mention your websites. The H2 Oil website is h2oil.com. Your website is fuellegacy.com. You've got some other websites that also have the same content. And I will mention, by way of full disclosure, that I do have an arrangement with you. I like this product. I like the idea, what I've heard from both of you before this interview. And I've joined your company, and our promotion code is PES. So fuellegacy.com/PES will credit us with the referral if you want to buy product or become part of this company.
What does the PES stand for?
Pure Energy Systems.
Pure Energy System. Okay.
Yeah.
I know you told me that earlier. It definitely defines the PES a little better for me.
Well, thank you for joining us on this segment, Richard and Dan. It's been very informative, and we certainly wish you the best in rolling out this product.
Thank you very much, Sterling. I appreciate the time as well.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me as well, Sterling.
You bet. Take care.
Okay.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.